Yes, I am. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men cometh here on our first show this evening. Look, we just want to say thank you very, very much to Tim and to Pete from The Ride for making us feel welcome and for just helping us negotiate the equipment here while we step in for our very first show on this brand new season on Edge Radio. My name's Trent.
And I'm Mark. And it's great to be here with you tonight. Thanks also from me to the guys from The Ride. We've stumbled into the studio. We've kicked a few things over. We've switched on microphones when they're not meant to be switched on. And now we're talking out over the airwaves, and it's scary.
Well, we've got a lot of things coming up for the show tonight. So, look, we'll just pause for a moment, try and get our act together a little bit here, and kick off with the Church and Operetta on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. This is the Dice Men Cometh, talking tabletop gaming and board gaming in Hobart. Back in a moment. That is the Church with Operetta on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark here on the Dice Men Cometh, our very first show. And look, we thought we might take a little bit of time to just explain who we are, what exactly Dice Men are, why we're cometh-ing, and what we're doing here. Basically, we're talking about board and card games here in Hobart, specifically, because we're part of the local Hobart gaming scene, the local Hobart gaming club, the Hobart Gaming Society, a.k.a. HOGS. But I guess maybe people are wondering why board and card games are even important these days, Mark.
Trent, why are board and card games really important these days?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Sales of board and card games over the last 10 to 15 years have been going up by around about 20% every year.
Wow.
More or less. So it's a really growing industry. I mean, it's still very, very niche, but sales just going up and up and up and up. And the amount of titles that come out every year, have you got any idea the numbers of games that are being released every year around the world?
I couldn't quote a number, but I know it. You know, the big game shows, they will have literally hundreds of releases. And we're talking, you know, there is the biggest game show of all, which is Essen in Germany, the biggest game convention in the world. They will have hundreds of titles that were released at that show.
Something like 800 at the last one a couple of weeks ago.
That's exactly right. And let alone then some of our listeners may have heard of Gen Con, a big gaming convention, not just for board and card games, but for other tabletop games, role-playing games, things like that.
That's
in America.
That's the big one in the States, yeah.
That's right, in Indianapolis. And again, they're releasing hundreds of titles. So you're literally there. Between those two, you're looking at maybe 1,000 titles released a year. Now, a lot of those will be small print runs, will go out of print really quickly. But there's some big titles and some big names there.
Yeah, and we're not talking about Monopoly or Cluedo here. We want to make that absolutely clear. These are board games, but this is going above and beyond what a lot of people would have played with their families in the 70s and 80s. So what sort of things are we doing in these games?
Yeah, well, in these games, to me, always one of the key things is these games are about fun. And you know, if you take the example of Monopoly, like Monopoly can be fun for about half an hour. The problem is usually that the game goes for about 3 hours. So what are you doing in that last 2.5 hours? You're pulling your hair out going, when is this thing going to end?
Being ground down slowly into dust by one member of the family. I don't know anyone who played Monopoly when they were kids who didn't at some point have some kind of screaming match with their brother or sister and flip the board up and just storm out of the room.
Yeah, look, and I guess with these games, we're trying to avoid the table flip. That's the key thing. We want everyone to have fun. We want everyone to be engaged. And it's giving a really great social experience. And I know both of us, you know, we're really into the social scene. We talk. We may have an adult beverage or two while we play the games. You know, it's a social lubrication.
And there, look, there's all sorts of games to play as well and all sorts of crazy themes. You know, you're not just moving around a board buying up property or making money. You might be saving the world from deadly pandemics or defending a city against an invasion, fighting off giant monsters, trying to build civilizations or conquer new territories or invade different planets. You might be launching a career in piracy in some of the games, trading gold and spices in the ancient world or in the Mediterranean. Or in one case, one game that you and I played, Mark, earlier in the year at a convention we went to, queuing for food in communist Poland. That was an interesting experience.
That was absolutely a cracker. And if you had said to me that I will be falling around the room laughing, playing a game about queuing for table lamps and tea bags in communist Poland, you know, I would have punched you in the eye. But it was hilarious. We had a ball. All the best Russian accent come out saying, excuse me, lady, can I please get in front of you? It's an excuse for a lot of fun. It really is.
Now, with the games we're talking about, they come in two broad categories. There's your Euro game. Can you explain what a Euro game is quickly?
Yeah, so Euro game is very, I guess, mechanical in the terms of it, that you do stuff and you do stuff to get stuff. Often, you are doing things that are going to give you victory points. And many of the Euro games have cubes, little wooden cubes that represent various things. Some of them represent people. Some of them represent resources. Often these games can be called cube pushers for that reason. Mm. And so you're building an economic engine to get resources, to turn the resources into victory points and ultimately to win the game. And with Euro games, generally, there's no player elimination. So no one gets kicked out, no one gets killed. It's all very nice, and usually there's a very defined endpoint, whether it's a number of turns or when something runs out, but there's usually a very defined endpoint in those games.
And if that sounds really boring, you're not alone, because that's my basic opinion of most Euro games. The alternative, the other school of thought, is what's called a merry trash. Now, these are the games with all the bells and whistles, the over-design boards, and it's usually got a lot of direct conflict mano a mano on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And most Ameritrash games have the fabulous thing that we love about games. It's in our name. It's the dice.
Yeah.
It brings in that random element where you've done everything you can. You've lined up all your ducks in a row. You're going to wipe out your opponent, and you throw the dice, and wham, snake's eyes.
So there you go. There's a little bit about board and card games, although I suppose we haven't even talked about card games just yet. But, look, we're going to be talking more, obviously, up to 8 o'clock. We're also going to be sort of getting into some of the nitty-gritty behind the scenes about why games cost so much, because it's not necessarily a cheap hobby, and particularly if you're living in Australia, particularly if you're living here in Tasmania. We're going to be talking about exactly why that is in a little while here on Edge Radio 99.3. The Dice Man Cometh, our first show tonight. We'll be back in just a sec. This is Love and Rocket, Cybernetic Express. Bill Callahan and Javelin Unlanding and Cybernetic Express, Love Rockets. This is The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. My name is Trent. I'm joined by Mark. And this evening, it is our first show for The Dice Man Cometh. And look, we've been talking it up on Facebook. How many likes have we got on Facebook already?
We're up to 70 likes now, Trent.
We haven't even done anything.
No. That's what I'm worried about. They might expect something.
Well, look, I think people have been expecting to hear from Tommy Dean tonight, the Australian comedian. He's American, actually. He's one of our favourite American imports, though. He's been a gigging comedian in Australia for years and years. Huge gaming nerd. And former Australian Blood Bowl champion.
Sounds gruesome.
You know what this Blood Bowl is?
I've seen it.
Okay.
It's like American football, but with
Lord
of the Rings.
All right. Well, you know Warhammer, okay? The tabletop miniature game Warhammer.
Yeah.
Warhammer 40K.
Do, yes.
That massive money sink that, you know, kiddies pour all their pocket money into from their paper round. Okay. Well, Blood Bowl is the football that the people who live in the Warhammer universe are playing when they're not fighting each other.
This doesn't sound nerdy at all.
Anyway, look, we were going to be talking to Tommy Dean, and in fact I did yesterday pre-recorded an interview with him and took it home, got it onto the Mac at home and chopped it all up with Audacity, loaded it onto the USB to bring it in here. Lo and behold, it's not working.
So Tommy sends his regards to you all. He likes playing games. He likes telling jokes. And look, the really good news is next week, I think, we're probably going to have an interview from Tommy Dean.
I suspect it might be an issue with the software in here not reading a USB that's been formatted by a Mac. Could be that.
Hey, let's blame it on that.
Look, I promise we're going to sort it out between then and now.
It's not our fault, though.
No, clearly.
Technology.
Absolutely. Well, look, What else are we going to do then, if we're not talking to Tommy Dane?
We could talk about some of the games we've been playing.
Good idea.
So
you first.
Okay. I've just recently, in fact, on Sunday night at one of our local gaming nights, I played a game called St. Petersburg.
That sounds like a Euro.
It definitely is a Euro game. It takes about an hour. It's a game of, I talked about mechanics, it's a game of hand management and of managing your money. Every ruble is precious in St. Petersburg.
Oh, that kind of hand management.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, right.
And so you start with very little money. You are purchasing workers, as all the best people do in St. Petersburg. You're purchasing workers to get you more money, to allow you to purchase buildings that are going to get you prestige points, which is another name for victory points in many Euro games. Mm. And you're also purchasing the favours of aristocrats.
That would make for a more interesting game.
Yeah, that would be the Disney version. Yeah. And so you're managing. You can only fit three cards in your hand at once, and you have some cards on the table. So it's this delicate juggle of what can I have in my hand, what can I afford to pay for, what can I get out to keep the money flowing, what do I want to get to stop that guy from getting it, and it plays in about an hour. Plays four plays. It's really tight. It just cruises along quite quickly.
I have actually played this with you once. I did quite enjoy it, I must admit.
And look, it doesn't sound like a lot of fun, but you know, the key rule in St. Petersburg is you are always run one ruble short of a fistful. It is that really tight economic management where you never have enough money.
Yeah, and you find that with a lot of these games, you're always up against it. Your back's against the wall somehow, where you're trying to build a little economic engine so you can crush your opponents. A game I've played recently is Zolkin, which is an old Mayan word, and it refers to the old Mayan calendar of 260 days. Now, this is the thing that supposedly was going to bring about the apocalypse last year, right?
I was going to say Zolkin, what you were upset on about something.
So Zolkin is a game that was released to a great fanfare last year. Their timing was absolutely perfect because this apocalypse was supposedly about to happen. It's an Italian design game. It's published by a Czech Republic group, and it's about South America. So just bear with me on this.
It's a multinational effort there.
Yeah. On the one hand, it's a sort of bog-standard worker placement resource management Euro. So every player starts with three little workers, and you're putting them out on the board. And when you remove them from the board, they're doing an action. And in this case, they're growing corn. Tremendously exciting. But wait, there's more. There's corn, there's wood, there's stone, there's gold, and there's crystal skulls. See, now it's exciting. Crystal skulls. And you use all of these resources differently to buy buildings and monuments and favor with the different Mayan gods and ultimately victory points. Very colorful, very attractive board, a little bit of iconography to get your head around. But the big, big selling point about Zolkin is the five enormous plastic cogs that you assemble for each game, and they're actually moving like clockwork. They look like the Mayan calendar with teeth on the cogs interlocking. You put these onto the board, there's a holes punched in the board, they fit together, and when you spin the large cog in the middle, that connects to these five other ones, and the workers spin around.
Yeah, and look, for those people, you know, we know radio is such a great visual media. We've actually got a photo of this game on our Facebook page, which reminds me, if you want to know more about the Dice Men Cometh and contribute to this show, go to facebook.com/thedicemencometh and you can send us information, you can give us ideas, you can engage with us there, you can call us names and tell us we were lousy. It's a really great opportunity to do that.
But please go easy on us just for this one, because we do have our training wheels on tonight. It is our first show, and like I said, I know we promised you Tommy Dane, but we'll definitely have it for you ready next week. He was quite pleasant to chat to. Lovely guy. Okay, Trent and Mark here on The Dice Man Cometh. We'll be back with you in just a sec. Right now, we've got a track for you. It's Speak Low from the Ills, or the Isles, rather. Is that how you pronounce that? The Isles, Speaking Low. Very chilled beats there on Edge Radio 99.3. Trent and Mark, the Dice Men Cometh, our first show tonight on this, the brand new season of Edge Radio, getting set for summer.
Now, Trent, I want to address the elephant in the room,
The what?
The elephant in the room.
Hang on, excuse me. Excuse me.
No. I was making not a comment about your size.
I've been working quite hard on my weight. Thank you very much.
No. Our name, The Dice Men Cometh. Now, people have been commenting about it on Facebook.
Well, we ran a little bit of a competition just amongst the members of the Hobart Game Society about what we should actually call our show. And I think we came up with... It was going to be Of Dice and Men.
Yes.
At one point.
Some classic.
I wanted to call it... I just diced in your arms tonight, but I couldn't get anyone to agree to that.
You out there, I'm sure, will come up with much better names than we ever could. But one of the things is, and it's been raised by our, I don't like to call them fans, people who bother to tune in or communicate with us.
Yes,
is obviously
people we have to convince.
That's right. Those grammar Nazis out there, that of course cometh is the archaic third person singular present tense suffix. And clearly there is two of us. But I ask you, who is going to tune in and listen to the Dice Men Come?
I'm not going near that one. Coming up shortly on the show, we'll be talking game pricing. If you're just getting into the hobby, you might be startled to find that you can spend upwards of $80, $100, $120 on a board game.
Or if you get into these card games, such as Magic, or many of the other limited card games, you know, we're talking three, four, five plus hundreds of dollars.
Or the aforementioned Warhammer well. And we're going to be talking about dollars and cents and also talking about Bond, James Bond. But right now, a Tassie track, Zombie Dog. Zombie Dog's the name of the song from The Captives.
And zombies is one of those things. There are so many zombie games at the moment. It's the most overused theme.
So many zombies.
Look, we've got Mall of Horrors. We've got City of Horrors. We've got Zombicide. We've got Eaten by Zombies. We've got A Dingo Ate My Zombie. And the ubiquitous Zombies! ! We're sick of zombies. Come up with something else, you game designers. Wait, maybe we've got an idea for you later in our show.
That is a brand new song on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Perfect Crime by Machine Translations. And it's only fitting, given that this is a brand new show for a brand new season on Edge Radio. This is The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Mark talking tabletop culture and tabletop gaming here in Taswegia, and specifically talking about the prices of games. I want to have a little bit of an uninformed discussion, Mark.
We should make it clear up front. We're not for either point of view. Obviously, there's online retailing, there's bricks and mortar retailing. We use both, we support both. But I guess for this discussion, we're going to do a bit of devil's advocate type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because let's face it, games are bloody expensive.
Absolutely.
You know, but particularly some of the high-end stuff from companies like Fantasy Flight, titles like Arkham Horror or a Twilight Imperium. You're talking $120 or even more. I mean, I've seen them $140, $150.
Yep.
Now, why is that so? The short answer is because we live at the bottom of the world, as far away as you possibly could be from the people who manufacture and publish these things. But I think it's also a little bit more complicated than that, because the main thing that you have to understand about board games is that no one's getting rich off these things.
No, that's right. Often the figure that I've heard bandied around the internet is that designers might make 50 cents from a copy of a game.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and they're very expensive to produce. They also weigh a lot. So they're high volume, low yield. That's the phrase I've heard sort of bandied around the industry. And that's to do with all the supply chain. So the game designers, you know, the nerds who work on this in their bedrooms, they rely on publishers to get things printed. And that's a lot of money. So the publisher takes on all the risk.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so that's where most of the money resides. And then the publisher relies on a distributor to get it into stores, because the distributors are the storage and logistics specialists. Okay, so they're paying for all the shipment. Now, in Australia, the distributors that that most stores would deal with would be, there's only a handful. There's Good Games, they're one of the biggest ones, Jedco and Ventura. Those are the three main distributors for board games. There's a few other smaller ones like Even Toys and Games. And then there's a couple that do like a single product like Magic, right, which is a huge trading card game. I mean, look, I think, you know, most people have at least heard of Magic. I mean, it's been around since the mid-90s, yeah.
And clearly you're talking about Wizards of the Coast there.
Yeah.
They do another little product that a few of our listeners may have heard of, Dungeons and Dragons.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. They bought up TSR some time ago. There's some other trading card games like Yu-Gi-Oh! From Banter Toys. These things sell a lot, a lot of units. So the distributor sells the games to the retailer, and that includes a markup for their costs, for the distributor's costs, and that's minus the publisher's fees as well. And then the retailer, they also have to pay the freight cost. And that's where part of the problem comes in when you're living in Tasmania.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Our freight comes through Melbourne most of the time. And the local retailers here, if they're going to stock that in, they have to pay that cost.
Yeah, and I think the big thing, too, that we forget about sometimes is, you know, one single gaming store in Hobart is not going to buy a 40-foot container full of games.
Yeah.
If they did, maybe the costs are going to be down a bit. And you're not going to buy a 40-foot container of one type of game. So because you're getting mixed freight, then your costs are just going up and up and up.
Mm, and the retailers put the product on the shelf, and they've got to cover the cost of getting it to the store. Then they've also got to cover their own operating costs.
Mm.
All right. Now, you've worked in retail, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah, so we're talking...
So you've got your staff costs,
yep.
You've got your rent, you've got your electricity. They're the main... And, you know, staff costs can be huge, particularly when you've got seasoned veterans, like some of our local people that work in these stores that actually have an opinion about games.
And this is before you've even... You're even thinking about making a profit.
Yeah, exactly.
On anything, and actually the store owner making a living out of doing this. Yeah, so it's a complicated business. Now, what kind of markup do you sort of what's a standard retail markup on a like a random item like a bit of fashion or some clothing or something?
Well, I mean, fashion is really interesting, and that's an industry that I have worked in, believe it or not.
You're a fashionable guy.
Well, there you go, but I didn't tell you that I worked in young women's fashion.
Okay.
Anyway, we won't go there. You know, in that industry, we're talking markups of 200-300%. So there's a lot of margin to play with.
200-300%.
Yeah. It's very high. And I think that's the thing with the gaming industry is we've talked about. These things are expensive to produce. They're expensive to ship around. There's not a lot of fat left in the end mark up.
I can tell you for a fact that you're not looking at 200-300% markups in retail anywhere.
Mm.
Okay, you're talking like maximum 50% markup,
yeah,
that the retailer has to cover their costs with. And usually it's a lot lower than that because it's a really competitive thing. Because I could go into a bricks and mortar shop and buy it for $80, or I could get it online for $20 cheaper than that, but then I might have to pay $10 postage as well.
Yes.
So there's costs that are just, you know, shifted to one side or maybe even hidden a little bit because you might bundle it together or something like that. I think it's really interesting to compare this to the cost of the new, to talk about electronic games for a moment, the cost of the new Xbox and the new PS4, which have just been released, okay? The Xbox One is $499 in the US, $599 here, Australian dollars. The PS4 is $399 in the US and $549 here locally. Now, why the difference? You don't know. You don't know what deals are being done behind the scenes in these distribution chains. If you shop around, you might save yourself $50. And there's also consoles that might get bundled up with video game titles that they'll have a massive markup as well. So it's hard to know what it is you're really paying, what percentage the retailer is actually getting. And that's only if there's actually any of those consoles left at all.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the things that's always amazed me is when people balk at the price for a board game. You know, no one balks at paying $100 for the latest Grand Theft Auto or whatever the latest video game may be because I'm not in with the cool kids.
And you know in 6 months' time that's going to be half price.
Well, the thing is, you know, with those games, you play them and they might have hundreds of hours of content, but because people stay up all night, you know, they might knock off that hundreds of hours of content in 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. With a board game, you might play, you pay less than $100. You might only play it for a few hours, but those hours will be spread over 6, 12, 18, 24 months. It's something you keep coming back to every now and again. I think you're going to get much more longevity out of a board game than you are out of a similarly priced video game. That's my 2 cents worth,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. And ultimately, if you want a store in your local town, be it Hobart or wherever, that actually stocks these things, you've got to support it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's being able to walk in, speak to someone knowledgeable,
And then to have them ideally, you know, contribute to the community around board, yeah, gaming as well, and to have them be a part of it.
And I think we've been really lucky locally, where we've seen that the growth in the members of our gaming group, a lot of it has come from a local retailer telling the people who buy games, hey, do you know there's a group in your area that's playing games regularly? You can meet like-minded people. As we've seen, you know, that's really helped to grow our membership. So, look, it's a great thing to be able to buy them cheaply and get them quickly, but it's also great to be able to walk in, take something off the shelf and contribute to the local community. It's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, we all know it's really hard for small business in Australia in general, and particularly here in Tasmania, and something like half of all businesses fall over in about 5 years. We've all heard that stat. And you can do all the best planning in the world for your business, and then the US dollar suddenly collapses and the Australian dollar goes up and you can't prepare for something like that. So you can be smart and still have things go wrong, or you can be just stupid and sink all your money into a niche hobby like gaming just because you're passionate about it and you don't know anything about the market or about running a business, and you might find yourself in a little bit of trouble. Something to think about on The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark. Wonderfully named King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. God is calling me back home on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Man Cometh. Nearly the end of our first show. Someone's calling us back home. Trent and Mark here, just about to wrap things up. It's been an interesting experience, this one. We've had our training wheels on for this first show, but it's been a bit of fun.
Well, look, I've had fun. I hope you out there have had fun. Trent, I wanted to throw something to you, though. We talked before about how every second game has got zombies in it. Oh. There are these tired old tropes that come up again and again and again.
And in the board gaming world, yes.
I know it in everyday life, really. But I know that you have an idea to be a budding game designer. The cogs were turning there, but nothing much was happening. You have an idea to be a budding game designer. You are a budding game designer. I'd like to...
I'm more of an ideas man rather than a... rather than a hard work kind of guy.
Well, look, you know, I want to direct some of your ideas. How about the challenge for you is, by next week, you come up with an idea for a board game that doesn't involve this tired old theme over again.
You want me to design a game in a week?
Oh, maybe not the whole game, but, you know, put a bit of flesh on the bones.
You know, look, it's funny you should mention that, actually, because on the weekend, I was in Melbourne on the weekend, and I went over for the James Bond exhibition.
You didn't go for Sexpo as well, did you?
Look, Sexpo may or may not have coincidentally been on at the same time as the James Bond exhibition. It's on at the Melbourne Museum, and check this out. This is the book that comes from the expo.
Oh.
And that's got all the exhibits, all the costumes, Look, if you can think of a Bond prop, something from the Q Lab, it's there in the exhibition. It's absolutely fantastic. And it did get me thinking that there isn't a James Bond board game on the market at the moment.
Did you know there's Pussy Galore in this book?
Correct. oh, Mark. That's the sound of half of our audience turning off right now. Are there any decent secret agent type games?
Look, I do know of one that came out, I think 12 or 18 months ago, called The Agents of Smersh, which is a bit of a takeoff of the sort of Man from U.N.C.L.E.
There was a James Bond role-playing game years ago, but it was terrible. I think I might have even attempted to play it at one point. Yeah. So I was thinking that, you know, I could just illegally scan all the pictures that are in this book and turn them into board game components somehow. But what would you do? Would you have one player being James Bond or everybody being James Bond at once? You have one player as Sean Connery, another player as Roger Moore, No, that's a terrible idea. That's not going to work.
All the competing James Bonds.
At once?
I don't know. I feel a slight stiffening coming on, Miss Moneypenny.
And then Timothy Dalton could finally come into his own. I think he was a little bit underrated, Timothy Dalton. Okay, well, look, that about wraps it up for us. I'll, we'll talk more... I'll,